The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Kaku. I'm one of the students and teachers here. I wanted to speak today about a verse from one of Dogen's Dharma Hall discourses. This one is number 434. It's called "The Moon Shining on All Beings and Oneself." The family style of all Buddhas and ancestors is to first arouse the vow to save all living beings by removing suffering and providing joy. Only this family style is inexhaustibly bright and clear. In the lofty mountains, we see the moon for a long time. As clouds clear, we first recognize the sky. Cast loose down the precipice, the moonlight shares itself within the 10,000 forms. Even when climbing up the bird's path, taking good care of yourself is spiritual power. I'll read that again. The family style of all Buddhas and ancestors. I love this phrase, the family style of all Buddhas and ancestors. And speaking of which, Bokushu is going to be taking pictures while I talk. So I'm looking for exactly the right kind of photo that will show me being very discerning and wise, but not old. And, you know, sort of articulate and to the point, but, you know, not too highfalutin or intellectual. And all of this is supposed to come through in the pictures that he takes today, so we'll see. Anyway, back to the family style. The family style of all Buddhas and ancestors is to first arouse the vow to save all living beings by removing suffering and providing joy. Only this family style is inexhaustibly bright and clear. In the lofty mountains, we see the moon for a long time. As clouds clear, we first recognize the sky. Cast loose down the precipice, the moonlight shares itself within the 10,000 forms. Even when climbing up the bird's path, taking good care of yourself is spiritual power. So, I think, first of all, I have a little bone to pick about this verse. When he says the family style of all Buddhas and ancestors is to first arouse the vow to save all living beings, I think that's not exactly the first step. That's one that comes later. So, for example, Dogen was 27 years old, and he was returning from Japan, I mean, from China to Japan. And, he was 27 years old. In other words, his intention, his spiritual path took him to China. And there he was there for 3 years, and he almost gave up the whole thing and came home, and someone redirected him to Rujing, and there he found his true teacher and had his next level of enlightenment. And that was completely pivotal for him. Then he felt he could return to Japan, and he had something to bring because he had learned something out of his enlightenment experience. So before that, first of all, he tells us in his sort of memoir that it was the death of his mother and seeing the incense rising from her memorial service and remembering that she wanted him to become a monk. It was at that point that Dogen decided that would be his path, that he would become a monastic. And so even though he had been raised in monasteries before that, he made the commitment. So the commitment comes after a period of something that's preparatory, in fact, to this experience. And he kind of tells us about it, but he doesn't take that into consideration here. But I think that each of us would have a story to tell if we went around the room about how we got here and what it took to get us here. Some of us may have started early, some of us may have started late. What is early and what is late? You know, I found myself saying to a friend the other evening after I had given a talk at Empty Hand Zen Center, that I wish I had gotten into this practice sooner in my life. You know, I read and I see what, you know, amazing scholars have done to bring us the Dharma in English. And I think, oh, if only I, you know, had begun studying Japanese and been to Japan and, you know, gotten into Zen, you know, sooner in my life, then what? Then I would not be here, perhaps. I might be somewhere else. But in my mind, it's, you know, we do that. We talk like that. Well, if only. But there are no if onlys. So I actually spent a couple of minutes reflecting on this fact. What held me back? And actually, in my way of thinking, what held me back was actually also what brought me here. Namely, my struggle with Christianity. I had very profound experiences of God as a Christian, Jesus, Christ, the whole thing. And it was very powerful and very real for me. And that is how my spiritual path carried me forward. And had it not been for that, I would have been a different person. So whenever you come here is the right time. Whenever you started your practice is the right time. There is no sooner or better or, you know, any other thing would have made you a different person. And so it's important for us to identify what particular quirks and qualities are that brought us to practice, as well as the ones that kind of hold us back and pose barriers to our practice. And remember that barriers are always gates. So that's why when we sit here, we go to the nitty-gritty. We don't just try to, you know, chill out and, you know, have a peaceful mind. That's the image that Zen has in the popular view of it, right? But if you're sitting around here a while, you know it's very different from that. You know that while we're sitting here looking very peaceful and tranquil, there's a furnace inside that is burning with all kinds of junk. And out of that junk, sometimes something comes. So There is no better or worse. There is no would have been, you know, better in some way had our lives been different. They are exactly what they are, and they have meaning. So rather than wish we had other circumstances, let's be sure to value the circumstances and the particular issues that brought us into this practice. So only the family style is inexhaustibly bright and clear, according to Dogen. To have the strength and the opportunity to arouse the vow to save all living beings by removing suffering and providing joy, it takes a while. I think what brings most of us to practice is something quite personal, some personal conflict or doubt or issue or problem that we don't know how to resolve. It also includes a spiritual hunger, whether we identify it as such or not. It means that we want something more out of life. So, what was it that brought you here? What kind of questions or conflicts did you experience that made every other alternative not workable? Chances are most everyone in this room tried some other things. I tried a number of things. You know, booze, sex, stuff like that. So it takes a while for some of us, and not so long for others, but it's always the right time. In the lofty mountains, we see the moon for a long time. So this is Dogen once again making reference to nature as the source of our model for what true living is about. So the moon is one of the symbols used in Zen talk to refer to enlightenment and to that experience of whatever it is. As clouds clear, we first recognize the sky. Cast loose down the precipice, the moonlight shares itself within the 10,000 forms. So he's describing our experience of once we do experience something of the absolute, experience the incredible range of human life, including death, which is usually part of the key to our transformation. Once we see that, then we not only have a glimpse of the absolute, but we also are able to see, as he says, the clouds clear and we recognize the sky, cast loose down the precipice, the moonlight shares itself within the 10,000 forms. So it's by, all of a sudden, by the light of the absolute that we see individuals, perhaps even see ourselves in a different level and in a different way. And it's seeing from the moonlight, the perspective of the absolute, the 10,000 forms, the individual people, including individual us. We see all things in this different light. We see all things in their individuality, and we also see all things in their finitude. The fact that everyone in this room, most likely, based on history, everyone in this room will die. That includes each one of us. And when we come to terms with that, or as we come to terms with that, we are indeed seeing our individuality in the light of the moon. We're seeing an end to our earthly existence, whatever our speculations may be about beyond that. And that's one of the driving forces for our practice, is that all things change. All people change. And we all face our whatever's next. And then he says, even when climbing up the bird's path, taking good care of yourself is spiritual power. So what he's done basically is put before us two ethical imperatives. The first one is to save all beings by removing suffering and providing joy. Did you get that part about providing joy? I think that gets left out of most of the Zen pictures about our practice. But it is. It's amazing. I mean, you know, we may not be jumping for joy at the end of every session, but there's a lightness to us. There is a... joy is really the best word. At the end of a practice period, something is different. Something has shifted inside. And we are renewed, or made new, whichever way you want to talk about it. And it is about joy. And the suffering, whatever we were suffering from, has a perspective and is no longer got a hold of us. It's as if there was a shift in power, and suddenly the suffering is incorporated into our lives without being what we considered a barrier to our life. Our suffering is softening us, perhaps, or opening us to larger perspectives than we had before. And so in that sense, the moonlight not only represents the absolute, but it is by the light of the absolute that we see things for what they truly are. The moonlight shares itself within the 10,000 forms. And even when climbing up the bird's path, in other words, even when we are ascending, you know, I mean, we have this, you know, discussion about is enlightenment a horizontal activity or is it a vertical activity? You know, do we go up or do we go out? Well, language limits us. But even when climbing up the bird's path, taking good care of yourself is spiritual power. Nobody can do your practice for you. You have to take care of yourself. And what does that mean, taking care of yourself? It means, so I have, confession time, I have a dog. And my test is, when I start getting angry at the dog, I know I'm out of balance. Because I'm clearly projecting my disturbed mind onto him. And, you know, he's just being a dog. But I find myself, you know, projecting it onto him. So it's a telltale sign for me. Okay, Gunn, you need to look at yourself. Because, you know, your dog doesn't deserve this. So even when climbing up the bird's path, taking good care of yourself is spiritual power. So how do you need to take care of yourself? Sometimes it means coming to the Zendo. Sometimes maybe it means taking a nap. Sometimes it means having something to eat. Sometimes it means not eating. Sometimes it means finding others to be with, to be in relationship with, and to share your life with. Sometimes it means being alone and facing yourself. It's the paradox of this practice. Whether it's 30 people or 100 people or 1,000 people sitting in one place, each person doing his and her own work. That's an amazing thing. And it does work. It does empower us. It does renew us. So, let's listen well to the sound of the moon shining on all beings and ourselves, and take in this great gift of moonlight that's a pointer for our practice.